552. Last time we started learning about, besides the Bikurim, the Korban Shlomim, discussed at great length last week the concept of Shalom. Shlomim means peace, its completeness, its unity, its all good things. And like we said, the Korban Shlomim was called Korban Shlomim because it made peace between Hashem, the altar, and the people. Because everybody got. A lot of Korbanos, only the Mizbeach got. It was completely burnt on the altar. The Kohanim didn't get, and the people didn't get. Certain Korbanos, the Kohanim did get, but the people didn't get. The only Korban that everybody got, the altar got, the Kohanim ate, and the Jews ate, the one that brought it, was the Korban Shlomim. And therefore it's called Shlomim from the word of peace, Shalom. But we discussed that the real definition of peace is when there's Shlemos, completeness. When there's completeness, then there's peace. Okay, so it says like in Pasuk, up to Pasuk Gimel. Perik Gimel, Pasuk Gimel. Page 552. Oh, okay. So it says like this. They take from the carbon of the Shlomim. They have to do Ishal Hashem, a fire offering to Hashem. What do they burn on the Mizbech? It says like this. As a chelav amchas as a kerev, the fat that covers the innards, that's called a chelav asher al kerev, and all the fat which is on the innards. I mean, there's two levels of fat. It's covering the innards and on the innards. The eshtei akloyus in the two kidneys, that's a chelav asher aleim, the fat which was on top of the kidneys, asher al aksom, which is on the flanks, that's a certain part of the animal. That's the aseres al akoved, and he should remove the diaphragm with the liver. Alakloyus, you sit on it together with the kidneys. So basically, the kidneys, the liver, the fats of the, you know, those were all burnt on the Mizbeach. V'hiktiru Esev in the Aaron HaMizbeach, and the sons of Aaron shall burn it on the Mizbeach, al ha'ila, besides the elevation offering, meaning, what the Torah is alluding to is the halacha, that the first carbon to be brought on the Mizbeach every day had to be a burnt offering that they burnt in the morning. And there's a communal, you know, the carbon tamid. The communal carbon that they brought each morning, which was a burnt offering from communal property, that had to be the first carbon to be brought. And where do we learn that halacha from? Because here when it speaks about shlamim, the Torah says it should be brought al ha'olah in addition to the burnt offering, which means the burnt offering is first, and then yisherech nechech Hashem, it's a fire offering, a satisfying aroma to Hashem, like we discussed, means that Hashem said, and everybody did what He wanted them to do. Okay, that's basically it on this part of the... Okay. Pasuk Vav. Again, part of these things we're going to go quick because they're just, you know, the laws, this burn, this fat, that fat. And unless you know an animal very well, it's hard to know what part of the animal we're talking about. Okay, now at the beginning of he spoke about this is if you brought it min habakar from the cattle. Now he says min atzayin karboni lezavach shlomim l'Hashem. What happens if you bring the peace offering the shlomim from sheep? So he says zoch in the keva. It doesn't matter if it's male or female. Unlike the ola, we learned has to be male. This could be male or female, but the only criteria is it needs to be completely whole, not blemished. Okay, like we learned last time, like 57 blemishes that an animal can possibly have. We're on page 554, Pasuk Zayin. Now, in keves umakives kabani, what happens if he offers a sheep as an offering? So he says like this, because there's two types of tzayin. Tzayin is a general word of sheep. But sheep include sheep, it includes goats, it includes lambs. These are all different parts of the sheep family. And the Torah is going to say the difference if you bring, here he speaks about in Kesef Umakriv. There's a very interesting Balaturim here. The Balaturim says, he says like this, Kesef is bigger than a tzayin, than a regular sheep. But he says, the word kesev, okay, in the letters atbash, Then you can change an aleph for a tav, beis for a shin, gimel for a resh, you know, the order that Torah is learned. So he says the word kesev, ba'ad bash, is levush, because it says, lovshu chorim hatzain. Because levush means garment. And by chorim hatzain, yisra'af yashiru, it's in pasuk and tilim. Now it's just interesting the way he says that the sheep has its own meaning. Okay, so he says like this. V'samach ziyadei rosh ha-kabana, you have to put your hand on top of the korban. V'shach ha-daisen yishach t'lefnei oil made in front of the oil made like we learned before. V'zanku b'nei Aaron, as damei al mizbeach saviv, and the children of Aaron throw the blood on the mizbeach all around. And we said, how do they do it all around? They, in two corners of the mizbeach, you squirt the blood on one corner, right, so it goes in both directions, and you do it on the opposite two walls, perpendicular walls that also go in all four directions. And also, again, we see clearly here, when it speaks about v'shachat, I say, does not say the kohanim. Because shechita, you didn't need to be a kohen to do the shechita. Well, if you look in the pasuk, v'zarku b'nei Aaron nezdame al mizbeach, as the Gemara says, from zrika onward, from squirting the blood on the mizbeach onward, then you needed to have a kohen. But the shechita did not have to be done through a kohen. If the guy himself knew how to shecht the animal, he was allowed to shecht it.
And smicha, samach yadu al rosh
karbonai. That had to, the guy himself had to do it. Not the kohenim. I mean, the kohenim, the public karbonis, they did it, but not by these karbonis. Okay, v'ikim mizavach ha-shlamim, and from the zavach of the korban of the shlamim, ishal Hashem, they bring this peace offering to Hashem. Chel by ha'alya tamima, the entire tail, he should burn. Together above the kidneys. Again, the tail, the Mefarshim explains, is the juiciest part of the animal. And therefore, the tail had to be burnt on the Mizbeach because that was the juiciest animal. There's a famous story in the Gemara Psachim. The Gemara says at the beginning of Psachim, there was this guy that used to bring a paschal lamb every year. And he used to trick the kohanim. Because a guy is now to bring a paschal lamb. It says, called Ora Le'echel Bay, right? They have to be a Jew. And this guy got dressed up like a Jew, and he used to bring the korban pesach every year. One time he bragged to Rabbi Yehuda ben Seira, one of the Tanoim of the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda ben Seira, says, ah, you see, I fooled the kohanim. I bring a korban pesach every year. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Seira said to him, he says, yeah, you don't know, you're not tricking them, nothing. Did you ever ask him for the tail? Ask him for the tail back. You know, that's the best part. Ask him for the tail, and they're tricking you. They're not giving it to you because they know you're a guy. So the guy said, yeah, okay, you'll see. He comes to the Beis HaMikdash. He brings his carbon paste. He said, I want the tail. So Kayanim knew that the tail is burnt on the Mizbeach. So he said to this guy, who told you to ask for the tail? He said, Rabbi Yehuda ben Seira. So they understood something's wrong, because Rabbi Yehuda ben Seira would never say that the guy should ask for the tail when the tail was burnt on the Mizbeach. So the Gemara says they checked into him, and they found out the guy was a guy. So they sent a message to Rabbi Yehuda ben Seira, and they said to him, you live in the Tzivan, I think it was, Upruzcha Metzuda al Yerushalayim, and your wings go all the way to Yerushalayim. And as he complimented him, that his wisdom went all the way to Yerushalayim, they caught the guy because he asked for the tail. But here you see the tail, and Mefarshim explained, because it's the juiciest part of the animal, Rashi says, therefore it was burnt on the Mizbeach, together with the kidneys, meaning the vertebrae of the tail grow out of the spine, so therefore you have to take that also. Whatever, whichever parts of the animal there. And together with the fats that's upon them, and all the fats which are upon the diaphragm, with the liver, with the kidneys, that whole thing they have to bring. It's interesting, over here, the Torah calls Pasuk Tes, it says, Lu'umas ha'atza yisirano. Over here, the pasuk is calling the kidneys the ha'atzah. Because the ox in here, it means the kidneys. Besides the fact that the next pasuk says kloyes. So it's explained, the Gemara says the expression kloyes yoyatzes. The kidneys give advice, etza, counsel. It's very unclear what the kidneys have to do with seichel. Remember when the Rebbe was sick in Lamed Ches, when he had his heart attack, so all the doctors who were coming in to treat him, one of the questions the Rebbe asked all the doctors is, what does it mean from a medical perspective? The Rebbe said, I know it's true because Tata says it's true. I want to hear from a medical perspective, what does the cloyas, the kidneys, have to do with seichel? And a lot of doctors answered different things, but it seems like the Rebbe told them that's not what the Tata actually means. He was trying to find from the medical thing what it means that the cloyas give aitzes. Okay, Eishtar Kloyas is a chedra she'aleim. In Pasuk Yud, it says the two kidneys and the fat which is upon them, which is al yasher asher al aksolim, which is on the flank. That's the yaseris al kovid, the diaphragm with the liver. Asher al sher aksolim, which are al kloyas, is sitting together with the kidneys. It should remove it. V'ktid al kain amizbeach, and the kain brings it on the mizbeach. Lachem ishel Hashem. This is a burnt offering for Hashem. But the rest of the meat was divided between the kohenim and the Judah brought the korb. Okay, this is basically the korb mishlamim of the cattle and the sheep. Now he says, "Vim eis korbanai." What happens if being a goat as a korb mishlamim? V'yikrivu lefnei Hashem. You have to bring it before Hashem. V'samach esyodei aresh again. You put your hand on it. V'shachat eisei lefnei oil meid. You shecht it before the oil meid, just like the other ones. The only difference over here we'll see, by the goat, there's no tail. There's no tail to be brought on the Mizbeach. And that's why the Mefarshim explained, why does the Torah say Eiz? It's exactly the same halachas as the one before. Why does the Torah say Eiz? The Torah could have put Eiz in the previous five psukim. Why does the Torah have to say Eiz separately? Because the only difference is the tail. Because by the sheep, you bring the tail, by the goat, you don't. So he says like this. V'ikiv mimenu korbani ishel Hashem, as a chel mechas as a kerev, again, the fat that cover the innards, v'ez kol achel v'asher al kerev, and all the fat which are on the inward, innards, v'ez te kloiz tukini v'zachev v'asher aleyem, v'asher aksolim, v'asher yisar sal akovi al kloiz yisirano. So over here it says the same thing, but it leaves out the tails, because there's no tail by the goat. The fire for Hashem, the burnt offering of Hashem. And here the Torah uses a very interesting expression. Kol chelev l'Hashem. Kol chelev l'Hashem means all choice parts go to Hashem. And this pasuk, halacha uses in a broad spectrum of things, that whenever you do things to Hashem, for Hashem, it should be the best. Whatever you give to Hashem should be the choicest and the best. By the animals we see it, but the Gemara learns out from this pasuk, Kol chelev l'Hashem, anything which a person does, the best of it, like we learned last week, the morning hours should be spent on learning rather than the afternoon when you're falling asleep. All these things, the choicest things should be given to Hashem. Okay. Then the Torah says like this, Chukas Eilam L'Dedei Seichem, this is an everlasting statute for all generations, B'chomesh V'Seichem, wherever you are, Kol Chele V'Chol Dom Le'Seichelu. Now, the Pasuk says, you're not allowed to eat blood, you're not allowed to eat the fats. But the Torah says, in all your places. Okay? The question is, why doesn't the Torah just say, don't eat blood and don't eat fats? One second. So the Mefarshim explain, why does the Torah over here say B'chol Meshvei Seichem? Because I would think you're only not allowed to eat blood and fats during the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Because in the Beis HaMikdash, the fats and the blood were burnt on the altar. So therefore I would think that because the blood and the fats are burnt on the altar, it's wrong for people to eat it. But if there's no Beis HaMikdash, and they're not bringing the sacrifices, so why can't a person eat blood and fats? So the Torah says no. B'chol Meshvei Seichem, whether there's a Beis HaMikdash or not, it's forbidden to eat fats or eat blood, or drink blood, whichever one it is. There's a very interesting argument in the Gemara, which Rashi brings down later on in Chumash Devarim. The Torah says, Rak chazak levilti achel adam. The Torah says, strengthen yourself not to eat blood. It's like the Gemara says, the Torah says, you really have to, it's difficult not to eat blood, but really strengthen yourself not to eat blood. So Rashi over there quotes in the Gemara, there's an argument. One opinion says, the people in those days were so indulged in drinking blood that the Torah had to say chazak. The Torah doesn't say chazak not to eat chazer. The Torah doesn't say chazak to keep cold, whatever. Torah, by dam, by blood, the Torah says chazak levelti achol adam. So it says because poshut people used to drink blood. They're indulged in drinking blood. The Torah says chazak. Another interpretation, the Gemara says just the opposite. The people didn't. So the Gemara says, what if drinking blood, which you despise anyway? The Torah says, strengthen yourself and don't eat blood. You can imagine when it comes to things that people want to sin, and they don't, how much reward they get. Then, but there's two opposite opinions. If the people were indulged in blood or not indulged in blood. What did you want?
No, you answered it.
You get the answer.
Huh? But the people actually, they themselves drink blood. What?
So how come, like, with the chicken, when there's always that, like, juice, how come that's not considered blood if blood's something?
No, because Gemara says, Shulchan Aruch says, you know, I get a lot of times calls from people, you know, they open up a chicken, it's full of blood, you know, on the outside. Huh? No, not all fat. No, 1 second.
What is fat?
In halacha, there's what's called shuman, and there's chalev. The different fats of the animal. I don't know exactly which one's which. Chalev is treif, and shuman is kosher. The two fats on any animal. There's a chalev, which is treif, and shuman, which is kosher. Like the punishment for chalev is eating is karis. That's what you'll see. What?
So when the shochet slaughters?
Not on the chicken.
Or how do we know?
It's in a cow.
That's all the tray for fats are taken off.
How do we?
The shochet knows, hopefully.
If you would shecht an animal and start ripping it apart, you'd also know.
The chicken doesn't have
feathers. No, the chicken doesn't have the tray for fats.
So that's only the
goats and cows.
The thing about the fat is only really for.
Do you know that you don't eat the hind quarter of an animal?
Right.
Okay. Why? Because that's where the gid anosh is, the silo, whatever sinew, whatever you call it. Plus, that's where the treif of fat is. That's where the chalev is. It's in the hind quarter of the animal. So now it's Yisrael. They would know what's called treibering the flesh. They know how to remove the gid anosh with the treif of fats that are on it. Because they know how to do it, they can eat. In Israel, they eat the hind quarter of an animal. Because meat is scarce and it's very expensive, so they want to utilize the animal to the fullest. Outside the righteous role, the minig became for all generations already that you don't eat the hind quarter of an animal because that's where the gidanosha is and that's where the chalev is, the safer fats. In fact, there's many tshuvas in Poskim that what happens if you import a treiberer from Israel or come to America and. The guy that separates the gidanosh and the fats. So what happens if you bring a guy, and they write that you're not allowed to because it's traditionally not accepted to eat the hind quarter in America. So period, that's tradition.
So they couldn't export the meat either?
They can't export the rump roast or whatever it is.
Filet mignon,
whatever it is. That you cannot import to export to America for people to eat it. It's the hind quarter of the animal. Okay, that's.
So the
but the punishment for blood, believe it or not, and chalev is karis. You don't get malchus, you're whipped, you get karis. Well, the Gemara says anybody gets karis gets whipped anyway, but the punishment is much stricter for blood and fats. But, and as the Torah is saying, it's not only because it was brought on the Mizbeach, therefore I don't want you to eat it while it's brought. It could be that because it was brought on the Mizbeach, Hashem said, you know what? Those things don't belong to people. They belong only to Hashem. What?
So the blood you see in the packages in the store, chicken and meat.
Oh, that's what we started off, yeah. So this, that you find sometimes when you have chicken, you cook, there's the juice, red, bloody, seemingly bloody juice. So the Gemara says in Shulchanot that this was called mohel, memvav heilamid, mohel, which is the juice, it's not blood. Because the salting actually takes out all the blood. And that's why, in order, the whole concept of salting meat is because of this pasuk, kochel v'chol dam le'sechelu. But it doesn't only apply to that. You can't eat any blood. That's why you have to check eggs to make sure there's no blood. Even eggs is really two different concepts of blood. Years ago, when the eggs were fertile, and an egg could become a chicken, right? So therefore, when there was blood in an egg, the whole egg became treif, because it was a possible beginning of a growth of a chicken, and then it wasn't shechted, it wasn't, you know, it could be eating, gave him an achai, whatever it may be called. Okay? Now, so then, if there's a blood spot, really the whole egg is treif, years ago. Now, that the eggs are not fertile, and the eggs can't lay chickens, I mean, can't produce chickens, so really, the reason why you can't eat an egg that has a blood spot in it, right, is because you now eat blood. So the custom is to throw away the whole egg. But there are opinions in halacha that are lenient. What happens is you mix an egg into a whole mishmash of food, and then you see a blood spot, so you can technically take out the blood many times. You have to ask a child, but I'm saying you can take out the blood spot, and then the rest of the egg is not necessarily treif. Okay? But the whole concept of salting meat is to get out the blood that's inside the animal. Now, blood is only forbidden, by the way, not that I don't want to give a class in Hilchas Dom, but blood is only forbidden. Technically, if you take a raw piece of chicken, a raw meat that wasn't salted, you can eat it with the blood in it, as long as the blood doesn't come out.
Was it salted or was it not salted?
No, it's not salted.
It's not even salted.
Yeah.
To it as
a... No, technically, take a raw piece of meat and just bite into it.
What do you mean?
Like sushi?
It doesn't come out. I mean, when you bite into it.
No, I'm saying if there's blood outside of it that you have to wash off.
Oh, okay.
The blood that's inside the meat, okay. But through cooking process, the blood comes out. So therefore, in order to get rid of the blood that the Torah says called dam le'sechelu, right? You know how to eat blood. You need to salt the meat. Now, in order to get the meat, the blood out of the meat, there are many conditions of how to do it. You know, you have to first soak the meat for half an hour, because that softens up the meat. And then you salt it for an hour. Then you rinse it off to get rid of the blood that's mixed with the salt. Right? So that's... and then there's a din, and just a few dinim, and that's it. We'll go further. First, you have to kosher the meat within 72 hours of the shechita, because then the blood will come out through salting. But if you have meat that was shechted and after 72 hours, or you didn't salt it yet, you're not allowed to cook the meat. The only thing you could, because then it's so within the, absorbed within the meat that it doesn't come out through salting. Then what you have to do is broil it. Or the din is, you know, everybody knows you have to broil liver. Why can't you salt liver like regular meat? So the Gemara says, and Shulchan Aruch says, there's so much blood in the liver, it's not enough to take it out through salting. You need to broil it over an open flame, and then the fire draws out the blood, and then you're allowed to eat the meat. One more din, which is very practical, by the way, blood. Human blood is also rabbinically treif after it's outside the skin. If it's inside, you can swallow it. Which means, if your gums are bleeding, you're allowed to swallow it. That's not a problem, it's kosher. But if you have a cut on your finger, and your people lick it, that you're not allowed to do, because then you're eating blood that came outside of the person on the finger, and that tak is treif.
It's less than a desire.
So don't say bracha.
Don't say bracha.
That's a shame.
Can you eat a half an ounce of pig?
Half an ounce?
A kazayis is an ounce. Can you eat a half a kazayis of pig? You could?
In a salad, it gets mixed.
By random?
You're saying it's a person.
Yeah, it's by random.
Random is random.
I mean, you should.
Well, it's by
it's
random.
It's biblically forbidden, according to Rabbi Yechonon, which is the halacha, to eat chatzi shiur is asim min ha-teira. Reish Lakish says chatzi shiur mutter min ha-teira, but asim is rabbanon. And Rabbi Yechonon holds chatzi shiur, half the amount, is biblically forbidden. Biblically forbidden. And that's the halacha. Everybody paskens like Rabbi Yechonon. The only difference is, if you eat a kazayis of chazer, you get 39 lashes. If you eat 3/4 of an ounce of chazer, you don't get lashes. So in certain places it says it's even worse. Because when you get lashes, that forgives you. Here you did a sin, you didn't get forgiven. But that doesn't mean you should finish. Okay, let me eat already the rest of it. You know, because that you're not allowed to. But this is all part of this pasuk, by the way. I mean, this pasuk, by the way, says many different places in Chumash, Rachazak, Viltiach, Adam, they say Chulal Adam. You know, there are many psukim that speak about not eating blood. But that's why you have to get rid of the blood, whether it's by soaking it, I mean, salting it, or broiling it, or whatever. But Moshe, by the way, people that have are very, very not, very incorrect English, people that are not allowed to eat any salt whatsoever. A lot of people have a problem, and salted meat is very salty. Even though you wash it off, but it's still very salty. The non-kosher meat. So then, it says in Halacha, what you could do is you could broil the meat, and just like you broil liver, you could take a raw chicken that's not kashered yet, and broil it over an open fire. Even by liver, the minigs, you put a little salt on. But if you didn't, it's also kosher. And they would actually broil the meat to get out the blood without salting it.
Is it non-kosher chicken?
No, raw chicken. You can't eat non-kosher chicken, if you put salt on it.
Chicken,
I remember we once moved in into the first house we moved to in Beverly Hills. We rented it when we first moved to Beverly Hills. So there was a lady, she was Jewish but not from, so she was showing us the dishwasher. We said, no, we can't use the dishwasher, it's not kosher. So she said, why don't you put some salt on it? She know you kosher. What does she know about kosher? You put salt on something. So why don't you just put salt on the dishwasher and you'll be able to kosher it? Okay, that's this.
Somebody can eat salty chicken, you just eat it raw.
No, but I'm saying you could broil the chicken like you broil liver. Okay, that's this. Next is.
But the meat, after you salt it, wash it. That red stuff.
The red stuff is not blood anymore.
But
it's juice.
I think can't swallow blood again.
No. Okay, now starts an interesting concept that we need to discuss a little bit. Perek Dalet, Pasuk Aleph. Okay, bottom of 554. Until now, we are all speaking about Korban Eila, Korban Shlomim, which were donated Korbanis. They were not mandatory Korbanis. Now the Torah starts speaking about sin offerings. You sin, you got to pay for it. You got to bring a korban. So it says like this: Dabar b'nei Yisrael, v'dabar shem meshalem. Dabar b'nei Yisrael, speak to the Yidden. They are saying like this: Nefesh kisechta. If a nefesh will sin, we call mitzvah Hashem from any. Simply it means from any of the mitzvahs of Hashem, asherlei se'asena, which are not allowed to be done. But also me'achas mehena, and he does one of the sins which are forbidden. Okay, so the pasuk now is going to go into the next many psukim is going to discuss the concept of sin offerings. Who sins? If the kohen sins, the leader sins, the person sins, a community sins, a shevet sins. That's all the psukim coming up. But first of all, Rashi quotes right away, even though it says mikol mitzvah Hashem. Simply implies that this korban chatos you have to bring for any sin. He said, Rabbi Rashi says, no, Rabbi Seinu Darshu, ein chatos bo al dovashes deni lav v'shigodis. In other words, like this, the Gemara learns out the only time you bring a korban chatos, which is a sin offering, is when you accidentally do a sin that if you did it intentionally, the sin would be kodis. In other words, if you sinned an accidental sin, what type of sin? A sin that if you did this sin intentionally, you would have to bring, you would get karis. Karis means Hashem kills you before you're 60 or 50. Like eating blood, eating chalev, those types of mitzvahs. Then that's why there's not that many aveiros that you bring chatas for. Which means like this. Or somebody desecrates Yom Kippur, Shabbos he gets stoned, right? If somebody desecrates publicly, intentionally on Yom Kippur, the punishment is only karis. So what happens if somebody accidentally desecrated Yom Kippur? Then you have to bring a korban chatas. Okay, one second. We'll soon see, later in the psukim, there's sin offering called chatas. There's a sin offering called asham. There's asham vadei. There's asham tolui. There's a lot of different types of sin offerings. Here we're talking about a korban chatas. Mm-hmm. So it says, for instance, if somebody accidentally ate chazer, there is no korban chatas. Because for intentionally eating chazer, you don't get karis. You get lashes. Korban chatas is only brought, Rashi says, in the name of Rabbi Seinu, that the only time you bring a sin offering called chatas is if it's a sin that if you did it intentionally, you would get karis. Okay? Now, the question is over here. Oh, let's first define what accidentally means. What is the definition of accidental? By the way, even if somebody desecrates Shabbos accidentally, now, the punishment for Shabbos is like this. If you did it intentionally, not warned, you get karis. You did it intentionally and you were warned, so then you get stoned. So therefore, accidental on Shabbos, the din is you could bring a korban chatas. What is the definition of accidental? And this is different than the civil definition of accidental. For instance, if somebody is leaning against the wall on Shabbos, and by mistake they turn on the light, that is not called accidental. For that you don't bring a korban chatas. In halacha terms, it's called misasik, meaning you didn't know what you were doing, and that is not called accidental. Accidental means you know what you're doing, you know what you're doing, but you thought that you're allowed to do it. That means there was a piece of chalev, or there was blood, okay, and you thought it was tomato juice. And you thought, somebody gave you a cup of tomato juice, you know that you're drinking, you know that you're doing the act, but you didn't know that this is blood. That's when you would bring a korban chatas. But if you didn't know you were drinking, I mean, which is a weird case in this case. Okay, that's what I'm saying. But by Shabbos, I'll give you another example. If you're leaning against the wall and the light goes on, that's not because you didn't know what you were doing. Okay. By Shabbos, which is part of this negative commandment that they're speaking about here, accidental by Shabbos means I know what I'm doing, but I thought what I'm doing is allowed. Meaning, either I forgot it was Shabbos, or I didn't know that this is forbidden on Shabbos. Give you a simple example. Let's say, for argument's sake, turning on a light is biblically forbidden. Let's say, okay? I wake up Shabbos morning, I'm half asleep, I forget it's Shabbos, and I turn on the light. That is called accidental. You knew what you were doing. You knew you were turning on the light. It wasn't you leaning against the wall by mistake the lights went on. You knew exactly what you were doing. You knew that you were turning on the light. But you forgot it's Shabbos.
Maybe you were sleeping and you don't know nothing.
Yeah, but obviously you went over to the light to turn it on.
You went to
so then you know what you're doing.
Which would be different than if you put the light on knowing it was Shabbos and realized your mistake after the
Shabbos. No, one second. Or another case of accidental, I know it's Shabbos, but I thought you're allowed to turn the light on Shabbos. I didn't know. Let's say it comes to cooking, yeah? Sometimes people think, oh, this is not cooking, I'm allowed to do it, and it ends up to be real cooking on Shabbos. You know what you're doing, and this is the definition here in the pasuk. Accidental means, I know I'm eating, I thought it was tomato juice, and by mistake, it happened to be blood. Then, or there was kosher fats versus trefa fats. I thought I was eating kosher fats. I ended up eating chaylev, which is a trefa fats. I know exactly what I'm doing. I know what I'm eating, but I thought it's allowed. This is the definition in halacha of shoygig, which demands a carbon. Okay? You have to know the act that you're doing. Now, the question is, and this is a very famous question, what did he do wrong? Why does he need to bring a carbon? I understand if somebody intentionally sins, he get punished. A guy doesn't know what he knows what he's doing, but I'm saying, he thinks you're allowed to do it. What do you want from the guy? Blame him for not learning. But why does he have to bring a carbon? And the question goes even more. The real question is, a guy is coming down a ladder. His best friend is at the bottom of the ladder. Yeah? Or her best friend. Their best friend is at the bottom of the ladder. They trip on a step. They fall down. They kill their best friend. You can't say, I wanted to kill him. I just wanted to make it look good. You know? This is your best friend. There's no way you wanted him to die or her to die. You're pulling your hair out of your head that you did it. Nevertheless, there's a din. You have to go to Ari Miklat. You have to go to Cities of Refuge. And you have to stay there in Golus until the Kohen Gadol dies. If he's a young Kohen Gadol, he could die 50 years later. Right? What in the world did you do? What did you do wrong?
So tough.
Tough, huh? So the answer is as follows. The answer is as follows. There is a pasuk that says, Lo yu'unne letzadik kol oven. God doesn't allow a tzaddik to come to do a sin. Even though Tosfos in the Gemara says it's only by food issues, but most of the Rishonim learn that God doesn't allow a tzaddik to do something wrong. What does this mean? The fact that something bad came through you, even though you didn't intend to do it, you're upset that you did it, you thought you're doing something good. The fact that God allowed something bad to come through you shows that you have a connection to that sin that you did. Which means, if somebody accidentally killed somebody, it was totally unintentional, coming down a ladder, they slipped, whatever, you know. The fact that God allowed death to come through you shows you have a connection to killing. There's something in you that's connected to killing. Because if you had no connection to killing whatsoever, Hashem would have never allowed Hashem would have never allowed that such a terrible thing would come about through you. It's a remarkable concept. Okay? It goes even a step further. It says here the word kisechta. Okay? The bottom line, nefesh kisechta. In Shemone Esrei, in Alchetz, in all the confessions, we say, Slach lo anovinu ki chatanu, mechal lo anomakenu ki fashanu. We say, Slach lo anu, chatanu, avinu, pashainu, right? All these are all terms of sin, right? What's the difference between chet, avin, and pesha? All three in English are translated sin, sin, sin. What's the difference between chet, oven, and pesha? So the Mefarshim explain, chet refers to accidental sin, oven refers to an intentional sin, and pesha comes with pshia, negligence, comes from a negligent sin. Okay? Which is worse than the other two. In Chassidus it explains,
where's that oven?
Oven is intentional. No, pesha is pshi, it's even negligent sin.
And it's worse than avon?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. That's why we say, Slach lanu avinu ki chatanu, mechol lanu makin ki fashanu. Mechol is stronger than slach. Because
yeah,
chatanu is a lesser sin, so you need less forgiveness.
All the
right. Now, the word chait in Lashon Kodesh does not only mean sin. Chait also, there's a pasuk in Malachim that says, "V'hoya ani ubni shlomo chatoim kol hayomim," meaning, if this happens, David HaMelech says, me and my son Shlomo will be missing all the days. Chait comes from the word lacking. And this explains, it's a very interesting pasuk. I don't know what a pasuk is, you have to ask the Tanakh people. Ein tzadik ba'aretz, ashe yase teva le'yechto. There's a pasuk that there's no tzadik on the earth, ashe yase teva, that will only do good, v'lo yechta, and he won't sin. In other words, basically, the pasuk says, you can't have a guy without a chet. Yeah? So the question is, by definition, a tzadik doesn't sin. Because if he sins, he's called a rasha. So how can the pasuk say, "In tzadik ba'aretz asheyasetei v'lo yechto"? If he sins, he's not a tzadik. So there's no tzadik that doesn't sin. If he's a tzadik, he doesn't sin. So the explanation is, yechto over there means he's not lacking. Chait means lacking from the level that you should be at. If you're not at the level that you should be at, you didn't sin. But that's called chait. That's called sin. What is the sin? The sin is that you're lacking from the level where you should be. And in fact, we find this pasuk even by Moshe Rabbeinu. The pasuk says in Tilim, "Vatechasreyu ma'at melekim." He was missing a little bit from God. So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah explains that there's nun shari bina, chamishim shari bina nivra ba'elam. We learned this Gemara a number of times. Kulam nitna l'meisha chaser achas. Moshe Rabbeinu reached the 49th level. And it says, when he passed away, he was buried in Har Nevoi. Chumash says he was buried in Har Nevoi. The Gemara says, nun boy. That was the concept where he died, he was buried in Har Nevoi. Nevoi is two words, nun boy. So when he died, he reached the 50th level. But in a body, the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, he couldn't reach that level of 50. So even by Moshe Rabbeinu, there's a concept of Vatechasreyu ma'at melekim, he was missing a little bit from godliness. That level is shaykh, as the pasuk says, even by a tzaddik. But even when the Torah speaks here in the simple sense, a person sinned accidentally. What did they do wrong that demands a karban? The fact that Hashem allowed you to eat this treifa blood, or this treifa, whatever, fats, or whatever it may be, that you have to bring a korban chatos, or Hashem allowed you to desecrate Shabbos, even though you forgot it was Shabbos, you know, you didn't do something too bad, shows that you're not keeping Shabbos properly. Because if you would be keeping Shabbos properly, you would never come to do something wrong. And therefore, it's another interesting thing. The word chola, chola, it's a person who's sick, chola, yeah? Chola equals 49. So it says in Chassidus, brings it down, it says in Sfarim, that a person who's not on the 50th level, they're still chayla. They could be on the 49th level, but they're chayla because they didn't reach the 50th level. So the whole concept of a sin offering is a remarkable concept. The Torah says, if a person comes along and commits a crime, say, but it wasn't my fault. You know, people, you know, justify, it wasn't my fault. The fact that it happened through you, like the Gemara uses the expression, Megalgalin Zchus Aide Zakai, V'chayv Aide Chayv. Good things come through good people, bad things come through bad people. The fact that the person was able to commit a sin even accidentally, or a guy kills somebody even though it's accidental, shows that you have a connection to murder, and if you need to go to the Ari Mikvah. What?
Today we see a practical example versus, you know, you have all the kosher labels on food, right? And then you see in the bulletin that this OU was given without, was incorrectly labeled.
Yeah.
You see that everyone who ate that had, I mean, could be hundreds of thousands of people who ate a product it was labeled OU, and then they came back and they said it was mislabeled. You're telling me all those people were connected to Sydney?
Obviously, all those that would eat treif, even though it wasn't their fault, correct?
Yeah.
The fact that Hashem allowed the treif for food went into the meat means they need to improve in kashrus. Yeah, that's what it means. There's a story, a famous story with Rav Shmuel Munkus.
What do you mean it's stressful?
Rav Shmuel Munkus was a very holy chassid of the Alter Rebbe. Okay? So the famous story, he was once for bringing, okay? And they ran out of food. So they sent somebody to the butcher to get some lungs. They used to eat lungs of the animals. It was a delicacy in the olden times. Anyway, this is the middle of the night. They woke up the butcher. They come back with the lung. Okay, and Rav Shmuel Munkus sees the chassidim are waiting anxiously for this food. And he grabs the food and he starts dancing with it, not letting anybody get it. And the more he was running away from them, the more they were trying to get him to grab the food to eat it. Finally, he saw he was outnumbered and was going to get caught. So he took the meat and he threw it into the garbage. Not today's garbage, you could take it out and eat it. Finished, you know what I mean? That all of a sudden, the butcher came running. He says, "Oy vey, I made a mistake. By mistake, I gave you a tray for lung." Okay? So the chassidim turned to Reb Shmuel and say, "Oh, you're doing this rebbish shtick that you prophesize it as treif. We have to beat you up for that because chassidim are not allowed to do miracles, only rebbes." So they wanted to beat him up. He said, no, it was not a miracle. He said one of the first things that he learned when he became a chassid was that something you really want too much, there must be something wrong with it. Because the desire, the yetzer hara is so strong. Why is the yetzer hara so strong? But it's... The Alter Rebbe taught him because there must be something wrong with it. He said, when I saw the lust that the chassidim had to this piece of meat, I just had a gut feeling something was wrong with it. So first I was running away, you know, and then when I saw the way you were attacking me to get it, then I really knew it was treif. So I threw it in the garbage. But it wasn't a miracle. He said, you know, something you want... So over there, they were saved, so to speak, from eating treif. But the truth is, people that even accidentally, you know, when they came, a Muncie story, you know, and all the things, or whatever it may be, it happened in LA also, by the way, years ago. The bottom line is, people that ate it, and nobody's punishing them, nobody's condemning them for what they did. The bottom line is, the fact that they ate something which wasn't kosher, shows that they're not as careful and cautious as they should be. And therefore, because if they would, God would never allow it. There was a person, I think it was Rav Naftali Rapshitz, one of the great Polish tzaddikim. He was a student of another great Rebbe, but he didn't eat anywhere. This chassid didn't eat anywhere. So they said to him, "But you're in the Rebbe's house, the Rebbe's eating, why can't you eat? What are you, different than the Rebbe, you know?" He said, "That piece of food that the Rebbe puts into his mouth, he would also eat. But all the other food he's not sure about." In other words, that piece of food that the Rebbe puts into his mouth, that he knows, but he can't eat it. The Rebbe's eating it. He said, "That piece of food I would eat." You know, and people are careful and kind, they don't come to sin.
But if no matter what, you want to sin, because even tzaddik sins, so...
He doesn't sin. He lacks.
He lacks, okay?
That's a very big difference between saying a tzaddik sins, or tzaddik is lacking from godliness.
No, what I'm saying is there's always a distance between us and the highest level of holiness, which is only is owned by God.
Right.
So even a tzaddik lacks.
Correct. So?
Because if not, he would be God. God forbid.
God forbid.
That's what we lack. And it's normal we lack. So, how could you live a life by being also stressed?
Torah was not given to angels. Torah was given to people.
I know, but there's always...
You know something?
There's always something.
I'm going to tell you something. We're just coming from Pesach, in case you didn't realize. I'm sure you forgot already that it was Pesach, all the work.
Thank God.
Okay.
It was hard.
There were many tzaddikim that would go to the matzah bakeries. I'm talking about Europe or wherever it was, to supervise the matzah baking. Mm-hmm. Okay? And there were other tzaddikim that Befedish didn't go. They said, if we would go, we wouldn't eat the matzah. Mm-hmm. But like this, a Jew is doing it. He has a chazaka, kashrus, you know. He has a chazaka that is good. I'd rather trust him than go myself, because if I go myself, I'm not going to eat it. Mm-hmm. They tell a story about Rav Chaim Brisker. Yeah, Rav Chaim Brisker, okay, was very, very, to use a funny expression, meshuga careful about the matzahs. Okay? At one time, Rav Chaim Brisker used to go to the matzah bakeries. And he baked matzah with every possible hiddur, with every possible thing. But he wasn't happy from the matzahs. You can imagine already. He wasn't happy from the matzahs. And he's walking home with his matzahs, he's very depressed. And he, walking opposite him, he sees a simple yid laughing, and he's happy, and he's excited. And so Rav Chaim Brisker stops him, and he sees also carrying matzahs. So Rav Chaim Brisker stops and says, excuse me, Yid, what are you so excited about? He said, what do you mean? I have good kosher matzahs for Pesach. I'm excited. So Rav Chaim Brisker says, like, what do you do by the baking? He says, I'll tell you the truth. I'm a simple Jew. I daven to Hashem that he should give me kosher matzahs for Pesach. And I'm sure Hashem answers my tefillah, and I'm excited, and I'm going home with my matzahs. Rav Chaim Brisker looks at him, and he turns to him and he says, you know what? Let's exchange matzahs. Let's exchange matzahs. The guy here is Rav Chaim Brisker's matzah. So, oh, wow, you know. See, they changed matzahs. So people said, this guy's tefillahs were answered. He got very good matzahs. You understand? Yeah, you can be lacking, but Torah is not given to people. We have to do as much as we can. Mm-hmm. Okay? But what the Torah is teaching us over here is every person knows in their aspects, like every person knows, the truth is, I could become better in kashrus, I could become more observant in kashrus, that doesn't mean we have to go crazy. One second. Hello?